Hello and welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
We are continuing our year-long dive into Watchmen with Watchmen number 4 of 12 here. But Ed, before we get into this one, tell us about Red Room.
Got to thank Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons for breaking down the doors, getting more shops interested and creating more of a comics culture, giving us a little bit more life to comics, man. Red Room. Issue number 1 coming out this month, May 2021. It's going to be a monthly comic. This is the cover for issue number 2. This is the cover for issue number 3. Recently just finished the cover for issue number 4. All these comics can be pre-ordered on the Fantagraphics website at this very minute, or you could reserve your copies at your local comic shop. Hit the link tree in the description below this video to take you to the Fantagraphics website for those pre-orders. Free Comic Book Day is going to be August of 2021 this year, and this is the Fantagraphics effort for that fun day of comicking. All original material, 33 pages, 5 different stories. Make sure your store reserves your copy for you. And patreon.com/edpiskor is where you can read all of these comics ahead of time before they hit their print edition. $3 to get you the archive.
You can join me on patreon.com/jimrug, where I post my original art. I post my process. You can read all about these two comics right now. These are the same story, but drawn 3 years apart. So we often do comparisons, same story drawn by different artists. In this case, same artist, but 200 pages more evolved, let's say. And you can kind of see my notes and my thinking on making the different decisions that I make throughout the drawing and the redrawing of this comic. You can also find and download my out-of-print zines and hard-to-find mini-comics on my Patreon. So join me there, patreon.com/jimrug. And thank you to all the kayfabers out there who have joined me in the last couple of months. Really appreciate that. Keep joining. I'll keep posting cool stuff there. But Ed, today we are diving into this seminal work of Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons, John Higgins, Watchmen, number 4, December 1986. And let's dive in. This is sort of the Dr. Manhattan story.
Yeah, really cool. In the trade, so it actually might be different here. Let me see. In the trade, they kind of re-amended some of the color. So if you remember when we last saw him on Earth, that super saturated blue that looks good on the TV, he's got that blue like in the trade paperback. So it's sort of the same blue that we see him typically, which is interesting to see in the issues, because I've never really seen issues of Watchmen before we do this reading. I love the blue and pink. Also, this is one of my favorite issues. The origin of Dr. Manhattan, Alan Moore getting metaphysical with the time, playing with the timing of comics, playing with the imagery in relation to the captions in interesting ways, and just spinning your head, basically creating a kind of like a pretty good argument for how a god may live his life when time isn't of much consequence.
Yeah, the photo's going to keep coming up, so I'll kind of keep flipping through as we continue this conversation. One of the things I like that you just said, Ed, is talking about playing with time. Before you said it's a god living his life, I was thinking it's one of those things that comics can do that almost no other medium can do, where we're almost seeing thought, tracing thought as it jumps around in a non-linear way, and he's referencing things. You know, this is 10 seconds from now, this is 10 seconds ago, this is 30 years ago, it's now. It's a really bizarre treatment of time. And it does make sense for a character who is living like a god and that all time is the same for him.
Here's another piece about like the godlike part and how Alan Moore is spinning our heads around. There will be a part in this comic where he's talking to his old lady man, Janie Slater, and he's like, you know, we're about to fuck in about 6 minutes after you get these earrings. And she's like, you're making me crazy. Like, this whole issue does that to us. Yes. You know, like, so we feel exactly what that Janie Slater girl is feeling when this guy is, he just sees everything completely different. It's fifth dimensional.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a question later on, and it's gonna be, I'll ask it now, but before we wrap up, I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. And it is, what is the significance of this story, this issue's story, to the Watchmen entirety? Because in a way, this is Dr. Manhattan's origin more than anything. And there are some really interesting pieces that come out of it. But I don't know that we need to know any of this stuff for the larger storyline. So give that some thoughts as we go through. The first, one of the first memories that we're going to see is this is young human Dr. Manhattan before his accident, following his father's footsteps to become a watchmaker. And whenever his father sees the atomic bomb, he takes the pieces, throws them out the door because he doesn't want his son to do that. It's in his mind, it's pointless at this at this point.
It's old fashioned.
Obsolete.
I want you to have a good job when you get old. This to me, this is Pittsburgh mentality.
Yes. I thought of that too. Like if I were, you don't see a father like this anymore in like popular media. And I think it's kind of amazing where it's like, boy, I'm going to point you at something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want you doing this thing. In some ways, maybe drawing comics. But it's an interesting piece that I just never see a father of that sort. He's not abusive at all. He's looking out for his son's future. And he's saying, like, the world's changed. You need to look elsewhere for your future.
And is like, basically, he's like, son, you need a job at Lockheed Martin because there's going to be bombs flying and you're going to be able to have sustain at that point.
And we cut to young Dr. Manhattan growing up and moving in that direction. You know, this is young John, fresh out of college, very decorated, very smart. And here he is basically working on these laboratories. This is such, there's so many cool visuals and there are things that you throw away, right? Looking through a foot of like protective lead based glass and you see him all distorted looking into this testing chamber.
Yeah, that'll come home to roost in a couple of pages.
It sure will. You know, the backdrop of where these photographs are pinned on the wall where he meets Janie Slater, his first, I'm calling her common law wife. He lives with her for, you know, 20 years or something. Even after the accident, they are together. But you're going to see this photograph will at one point be pinned up here, you know, their early meeting together.
I'm going to say that the Dr. Manhattan, we'll call it a costume, is the toughest costume to draw of every single character in Watchmen and maybe ever.
Is this the costume? Is it naked Dr. Manhattan costume?
That is the costume because it's essentially the Vitruvian Man and you have to have a perfect knowledge and command of illustrating male human anatomy in an idealized fashion. Almost zero people in comics can do it. The beauty of the costume is you could add a couple of things, man. If you don't know how those lats fit in underneath the arm or something like that, when in doubt, black it out. Dave Gibbons does not do that. He's building these figures and he's showing you all the, almost like watch cogs and stuff like this muscle fits here, this muscle fits there to create this whole.
One note for people watching at home, watch the costume evolve. Yeah. I asked if it's the naked Dr. Manhattan when you say costume, because we're going to see after his accident, he does start with a complete costume. Even the head is supposed to be covered. And we see as he goes on, it gets smaller and smaller until he's just totally naked. You know, it's almost like he's living this, I don't know, truth or minimalism or something. We see our accident. You know, he goes back to fetch a watch that he was repairing for Janie and is locked in because of automatic testing procedures, cannot get out. And it's such a nightmare as like everybody watches. Janie cannot watch and has to like look away. But I'm amazed by the faces of the people watching him in there, because what else are you going to do? Plus, they're scientists. Of course, they're going to watch it. This is a horrible thing, but maybe valuable research.
Sure. Yeah. This is a series of panels. Like I thought about the, like I was a kid when I read this in trade paperback way after the fact. But I remember thinking about this idea of like this, like, you know, nervous system and brainstem and eyes just like wandering the hallways. Like it was, that was a, like a certain nightmare feel for sure.
It's great. And it's almost the same size. Like I was thinking of that reading through here because we're seeing him like coming, you know, reforming. And I was thinking, like, it's almost you're repeating the size throughout these pages. Not exactly, but really close. This reminds me so much of that exhibit, the anatomy exhibit that toured around. Like
Bodies.
Right, several years ago, where you're seeing, like, the plastic insertion in these different systems. And, of course, all referencing back to your clockmaker.
Yep, slowly putting himself back together.
Exactly.
Intricate detail.
Yeah.
And then there he is, the deity himself, man. Fully illuminated.
Not quite a costume yet, though. He's got to draw the Adam symbol on his forehead before the costume is complete.
A symbol that I respect.
Yes.
Hydrogen Adam.
Some of these sequences of both reactions, but also like objects, like hair floating. Really great drawing. Drawing hair floating is hard. Like if you ever draw someone underwater, it's so damn hard to get hair that looks right in that, I don't know, gravity warped area.
Yeah, I love it, man. Because like the one early trick that we all get to play around with at school is you put your hand on that little little ball that would be in Spencer's gifts or whatever, and the girls with long hair, their hair stands up. Like, so we know that.
He gets his ring from her for Christmas, and he admires it for gold and talks about how gold is made and the purity of gold and things.
It comes from the stars.
And here we go with the early version of an attempt at a costume as they're starting to make him this public figure. And, you know, let's get some pictures. You can see the helmet that they want him to wear. Yeah, it's a whole suit.
Yeah, with the Smiling Joe Fission, like what we think of as Adams, but no scientist respect. So, of course, Doc Manhattan isn't going to respect that either. Not a bad Golden Age costume. Very basic, you know, one color. Give it a belt. Have a little doofy looking helmet.
The blue belt with his blue skin and the purple costume, I really like that. I think that all works really well, but man, that's a villain if I ever saw one.
Yeah.
I know a certain thing about colors and costumes. That's a bad guy.
The eyes is domino mask is a really nice motif, by the way.
Yeah, for sure. Kind of a happy accident. Well, not... I mean, obviously he designs that, but it's a really smart design. It gives the face a lot of character, especially for a guy who's mostly naked. I want to stick with that he's a bad guy idea, because there's going to be some ambiguity in his behaviors that carry through the entirety of Watchmen. And I think it's him not being a human, and I think that it is valid to think of him as a bad guy. There are things he could stop that he doesn't stop.
There's JFK at the bottom panel right there, man.
That's one. There's one, comedian in Vietnam. I can't remember if we see a split second of that in this issue. We've seen it before.
Right, yeah.
Where he kills a pregnant woman and Dr. Manhattan just watches.
Yeah.
He's going to start to, Sally Jupiter will enter the picture here. And there's references to her being 16 whenever they're making out.
Sure.
So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, this panel is a villain.
Well, here's some fun stuff, because there's young Moloch right there, which is fun. And this page, dude, you can't not...
Two super villains shaking hands in this panel.
Right. You can't help but think of, like, Elon Musk and all of his kind of, like, social graces and stuff when you think of Doc Manhattan. So this is Doc Manhattan, Hollis Mason's retirement. Now that you exist, Doc, like, you don't really need superheroes anymore. What are you going to do? I'm going to go, you know, I'm a handyman. I'm going to go work on cars, blah, blah, blah.
Which I think is analogous to The Watchmaker.
Sure.
Because he's like, you know, at least you know what it is. You see how it fits together. And the very next thing that you hear out of Dr. Manhattan?
Electric cars, man. There's not going to have the motors, not going to have all those moving pieces. Going to be much easier. So basically, Doc Manhattan is rendering our guy, Hollis Mason, obsolete two times on one page.
Yeah, you see Mason go from optimistic about his future as a mechanic to like, yeah.
We can now harness the lithium. Which is, you know, that's how everything's done. This shit powering your phone right now.
Yeah, some really good interactions with Manhattan and the other characters, the human characters around him, and their responses to him, you know. I mean, some of it's just completely destructive. This is your scene, Ed, of first we're having a fight, and then I'm explaining to you that we're going to be having sex in 3 minutes. Oh, there's the doorbell with your gift. You know, it's like...
Please hold me. Here, but here's
that's an amazing page of
writing. It is. Here's another really great thing, very subtle. And dude, upon these rereadings, you know, every time you read Watchmen, you see one or two extra things that you never noticed before. Here's one. We got our little Hydrogen Atom earrings.
Yep, on brand.
On his late chick too, man. You know, on What the hell's her name? I always forget. Lori Uspekchik. Silk Spectre. It reminds me, there, episode of Sopranos, where like Tony Soprano gets all of his mistresses the same like little wrist bracelet and stuff. It, that's Doc Manhattan, dude, giving his girls. He's branding his chicks, man. Like that Nexium cult.
Yeah, like he branded his forehead.
Yeah, exactly, man. He's like, you know, you're mine.
Wow. That's even darker than I came in here, Ed.
Yeah.
You know, you see him again with these...
There's a pregnant chick.
Superheroes, future villains, you know. There's so much ambiguity with every one of these characters. Like, who would you look at and say, that's a straight good guy, bad guy?
Yeah.
Even Moloch switches sides, right? Goes from being super villain to being, like, just a guy that's paid his time to society, his debt to society, and wants to get on with his life. You know, even he flip-flops.
What Janie Slater is talking about, like, you pig, like, let her know what's going to happen when her boobs start to sag and stuff. That's the whole MacGuffin, man, for the Twilight series. You know, those vampires never age and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, see, this is the part where he's talking about Blake's different. He understands perfectly and he doesn't care. Talking about, like, sort of good and bad.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me think of Dr. Manhattan's just, he's amoral. You know, there is no sense of, like, do this because it's right or it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like, no, this is just what happens. This is one of the greatest panels in a comic, in my mind. The ability to do scale, we always talk about this. Sometimes it's with Quitely, sometimes it's with Mobius. But for scale, like, the little figures in the foreground running, the napalm going off, the helicopters in the foreground, it's amazing.
I hear it, man. I hear Flight of the Valkyries. Listen.
Yes.
Listen, you hear it, guys?
The smell of napalm in the morning right there, Ed. I think it's still AM hour that we're recording. But, you know, it's another comic effect. And this time it's using that 9-panel grid to that splash page impact.
So, Jimmy, you brought up your question earlier, man. And this is where we start to address a little bit. Within these middle issues, we get our origin stories. Mm-hmm. Next issue, we get our Walter Kovacs origin story. But here we establish Antarctica. We establish Bubastis, which is, you know, eugenics, mm-hmm. Gene modification stuff that Adrian Veidt is playing with. Like, this is how he's going to get his alien character and stuff. So this factors in, you know. It's one page. It's a couple of pages, but it absolutely, it's an introduction of the Fortress of Solitude. It's going to play a very important part later on.
Love this stuff, too, by Vet about the our scientists are limited only by their imaginations. It feels very, you know, some of this stuff, I think, has aged well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, man. I mean, these iPhones that we have in our pockets, like, come from Star Trek. You know what I'm saying? And when you meet, like, a company like Google gets often criticized because it's a company full of engineers rather than, like, creative sorts. And so, like, the user interfaces and stuff are kind of, like, logical to their mind, but it's not pretty,
right?
You know, and it's the sci-fi writers, like, it's the people with imagination, real graphic designers that can, like, gussy something up and make it extra pleasing. And once again, that's the beauty of, like, a Steve Jobs guy as editor, who has one foot in the tech space and another foot in editing taste, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and you see his costume now has been reduced to almost a G-string.
Fucking cock sock.
Yeah, nothing there. Wonder if Lori designed this version of the costume, because hers is sort of like the female version of that costume.
That's why all these people are protesting, man. They're like, yo, dude, put on some gear.
I love this part, too, when he's like, pay attention, you will all return to your homes. And they're like, what if we don't? And he's like, it's not a request. And they're just gone. These are the great moments for me for... How do you do a superpower that looks cool? That's a pretty good one.
Yeah, and I think that this might be Veidt, like, somehow using, like, figuring out the teleportation stuff of Doc Manhattan, like, because, you know, when the alien just kind of materializes, I think that's another piece that ties us into the greater whole.
Yeah, that's a good observation. That's not something I thought of, but makes absolute total sense. Even why you would want this guy to visit you in Antarctica if you're Veidt. Like, study, like, how...
Get that one last little piece.
Work? Yep. Let me see you come and visit us in Antarctica with all my cameras here. And see what that looks like.
Yeah.
See if I can figure it out. You know, and you see the vigilantes being ruled out now. The superheroes that were once all the trend have been replaced, or at least outlawed. Some of them go on to become whatever he becomes, you know, comedian, a government employee, much like Dr. Manhattan, but very different set of powers. And Rorschach, of course, never, with a multiple rapist that he kills and drops in front of the police station to let him know that he's not going to retire. But you see others doing it, Silk Spectre and Night Owl.
The Night Owl body there, it's not quite the doughy body. It's like approaching the doughy body.
Heading in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an early dad body. You know, you get to see one of the things I think Alan Moore does in this issue, you mentioned playing with time, is seeing Laurie repeat the same stuff that Janie experiences. So, you know, you're getting like 40 years. When does Manhattan become Manhattan? It's late 40s, yeah. I think. So you're getting like these 20-year cycles out of both of these characters, and they repeat. It's kind of the same thing. They're even set off with these weird sex experiences, you know, towards the end of their relationships where it just gets to be too much.
A little foreshadowing here, man, with the atomic blast from Hiroshima and the watch that stops and becomes sort of like an iconic moment.
Even her walking out is almost echoes of Hiroshima, with the energy and color that's coming out of there after all the blues and purples and pinks of this issue, and now here we have the warm colors as she opens the door to leave. And then we've seen this scene earlier, the talk shows with the ideas of cancer, and the lab where he was formed, where the photograph comes from.
Yeah, and even the comedian's funeral with a little Moloch right up front toward the camera.
And our watch motif repeating from the sands of Mars as Dr. Manhattan is fulfilling his childhood dream here and making this complex model. And pretty much giving up on humanity.
Giving up on a lot of things. He's tired of looking at stars that are, at light from stars that are long dead, planets that potentially might be long dead. He certainly has a different point of view.
Yeah,
there's your Vitruvian Man kind of motif.
It's such an unusual point of view for a comic, for a superhero comic to be written and really trying to get inside the, I don't know, experience of a character with this kind of super point of view.
The best of prose fiction tries to do what this comic does. You know, certainly science fiction, where it's trying to give you the point of view of something that you have no experience of. Neil deGrasse Tyson always talks about, like, the different dimensions, space, time, depth, like, all that stuff. Like, if you're an ant, you can only experience a certain thing on a flat surface. Like, you don't know about time.
Yes.
And so, like, Alan Moore's trying to write about something from a point of view that nobody knows. So it's bullshit baffles brains in a little bit, but he handles it in a really cool way.
And the back matter here is just talking about the impact Dr. Manhattan has on the world, on the Cold War, on superpowers. Basically, it makes America a singular superpower. And then the great cliffhanger, which isn't here, but we have just read, is what happens when that superpower leaves America, because some of their foreign policy is extremely aggressive. And whenever you remove the guy who's keeping everyone else in check, what is going to come of that?
There's other little things that you read back here, man. So we've been seeing these airships and we've been seeing the electric cars and all that stuff. And all of that is kind of like laid out in this little 3-page excerpt piece. Love that stuff for the extra little touch of world building.
Yeah, it's, as you say, every time you read one of these or reread them, a lot more is revealed, and this is no different. That's a bold cover.
Yeah, really bold. I think that, like, some of that might be that marker air compressor setup.
Yeah, you see what looks like white splatter.
Yeah.
And pretty subtle and controlled, because it's hitting highlights of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you see it all on this light side of a little bit of a ridge of sand.
Gotta bust out that frisket.
Yeah. But that's a bold choice to put on the on a spinner rack.
Stunning stuff.
In 1986.
Stunning stuff, man.
Wild comic. I still can't imagine. I cannot imagine reading this and being four issues in and that's it. It's going to be another year before I get to read the whole thing.
Right.
Head spinning. But pretty cool. Happy to continue this, Ed. Anything that we drop here? Anything that we didn't cover in this issue?
Probably a million things.
And that's what true.
And that's what the kayfabers are for.
Yeah, my last note is just about the well-observed nature of Dr. Manhattan and his moral ambiguity. And we see it in half a dozen examples in this issue, from dating underage, letting comedian be comedian and kill people. It's in no way condoning any of his behaviors, but I think it's very well observed. And why not? If you're really this godlike power, you are going to have different concerns.
Right.
So I think that's pretty interesting, and it feels weird, feels a little bit alien, some of the stuff that happens in this issue, and
as
I think that's totally appropriate.
Yep. It's an alien, and we're looking at the Sands of Mars. Ready to go?
Yes.
Kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell, we'll notify you when new vids are available. Jimmy, what's out there?
Join me on patreon.com/JimRug, where you can see my original art, you can see how I make comics, and you can download my out-of-print, hard-to-find zines and mini-comics, patreon.com/JimRug.
Red Room Comics are hitting the stands. May 2021 is going to be the first issue. It's going to be coming out monthly thereafter. Put in your pre-orders at the Fantagraphics website at my link tree in the description below. Hit up your comic shop. Get it put on your pull list. If you want to read the comics ahead of time, hit my Patreon, patreon.com/EdPiscor. Read all the comics ahead of time. $3 gets you the archive. There are over 100 pages up there right now. And make sure your shop also gets the Red Room Free Comic Book Day comic that's going to be coming out in August.
Subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on and coming out this year. What a busy year for Cartoonist Kayfabe.
Goddamn right.
You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video as well, so you can look good when you're reading our e-newsletter.
Jimmy, give him one less set of margin orders, man. We're going to be on our way.
Read more comics.